The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, two-thirds of secondary school students have said their parents put no limits on their smartphone use. That's according to new research. I'm joined in studio by Alwyn Moran, founder of Cogni Kids, and by News Talk journalist Alex Rowley, who's 20, and who, I suppose, was born into the smartphone generation. Good morning and welcome to you both. Alex, we'll talk to you first. When did you get your first smartphone?
I suppose it would have been when I was about 12.
12?
Yeah, and I know it sounds a lot early, but from what I'm hearing now is kids are getting them in primary school. So this was probably as I was leaving primary school, I was allowed to have it. I was the last person in my class to get a phone. Okay. I was the last person allowed on most social media sites out of my class, albeit a small class. But I mean, it sounds shocking even when I say 12 out loud, but the reality is that was actually quite late.
Okay, now did you have a dumb phone before that?
No, I didn't. So
this was your first phone?
This is my very first phone, yeah.
Now, how did they restrict you? How did they control you?
Well, I suppose in the beginning, it would have been monitored what I was doing on my phone. Now, in fairness, most of the time it was just watching stuff on YouTube or talking to my friends on Snapchat. That was really all I used it for. And also just, you know, I wasn't allowed to, like, I had to have my homework done first before I went on my phone, or I couldn't use it in the morning before going to school. I couldn't bring it to school. So it was kind of a general just...
Okay, and would they take it from you when you were going to bed?
At that time, yes, they would have.
At that time. There was no TikTok in those days?
No, there was no TikTok. I think I made my first TikTok account in 2019 when I was in transition year. A lot of my friends were talking about it. A lot of my friends were saying that, you know, it's this new app and it's good now, because it was a different brand previous to that and it wasn't what it is now. And in the beginning, it was quite, I think it was when I started anyway, it was good crack. It was just a way to kind of pass time, and you'd, you know, if you had a time after your homework, you'd go watch through it. And in transition year, you've all this spare time anyway. So we were kind of making each other laugh with them. But I think it's a much different place now than what it was then.
Yeah. Now, did your parents attempt to put any of the digital controls in place on your phone?
No, they didn't.
And if they had tried, would you have been able to get around them?
I would have, yeah.
Okay.
I would have, yeah. Unless, I suppose most of them, they have a code. So the parental controls, it's like a Skybox code, for instance. So parental controls on phones, you set it up, the parent has a code. So if I didn't know the code, I suppose I wouldn't have, but I probably could have tried to figure out something anyway.
Okay, because they'd have a code that they would easily remember and you could kind of be a safe cracker and try and figure out what it might be.
Maybe, yeah. Although
somebody's birthday or whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I'm conscious my parents could be listening still, so.
It's definitely.
Okay. Yeah. At what point did they say, hands off, you can do what you like?
So I think just going through the years of being a teenager, I showed that I was mature enough to use one. You know, I kind of use it just in my spare time. The kind of content I was accessing, I was quite a creative child. I think I still am. And, you know, then I started to use the online world to build a career. And
I mean, you're a news hound, so...
That's the other side of it. And it was a great way of getting information. I often would use it for learning without realising. You know what I mean? I had a computer as well, and I talked to my friends on the computer. We'd play games, whatever, when I was a younger teenager. But then as I grew up, I figured out, you know, different ways, different hobbies, like, for instance, graphic design and stuff like that. So I think because I was doing things like that, my parents weren't too concerned. They thought, you know, he knows what he's at.
Okay, basically. Now you had a TikTok account, obviously. Mm-hmm. You had to register your age. Did you tell the truth? Or was there no controls back then?
I don't think they were, but I think for most accounts, I would have set it at an age over 18 while creating them. I think just on principle, because I, you know, in case he got banned from trying to sign up, and I didn't want to affect me when I'm older, basically. Yeah. So I think I probably would have lied for most of my ages, yeah, admittedly.
Now, we know the algorithm tends to be an echo chamber, so that mm-hmm. if you're looking at dogs and, you know, poor little puppies and so on, you'll be inundated with mm-hmm. loads of stuff about puppies. And if you're into pop music and particular artists, you might get lots of news feeds about that artist and so on and so forth. But did you get unsolicited stuff that you just didn't like and didn't want?
Yeah. And in the beginning, funny enough, when the algorithm hadn't learned me as much, I didn't get as much of it. Maybe it was because it was a different platform. Like in 2019, you'd see videos from America of people my age acting the fool, basically, and messing, or, you know, funny videos, or there was different trends of people would lip sync to different sounds. That was it in the beginning. I think now since the pandemic, it has worsened totally because news sites are on board now. They're inundating people with news. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. People need to be up to date with the news, but being constantly exposed to the news can have an effect on your mental health. I mean, I work in news and I can tell you that for sure. And there's that. There's also people now, they just have these random opinions that are completely unfounded because it's a completely unregulated site. There's people who are, for instance, one thing I'm getting a lot of now is this stuff about people who are losing their hair and they're doing hair loss treatment. And I looked in the mirror the other week and I even said to my mom at home, I was like, do you think I'm receding there a bit? And I know, and it's only now I think about it, it's like, that's where that's coming from. You know, you're seeing, so there's people promoting hair loss treatment, like these chemicals you put in your hair. There's people promoting ways to improve yourself. And I say that with air quotes, you know, fitness influencers who think that are essentially saying that you're too lazy because you're sitting on your phone scrolling TikTok. Why aren't you out doing this? Why aren't you eating like this? Why aren't you doing that? That's the platform it's become now. And I think Instagram Reels, which is Instagram's version of that, can actually nearly be worse in some ways because I don't watch Instagram Reels, but anytime I've gone on there, all I see is like horrific dashcam videos of car crashes.
Okay.
They're the platforms that's what the platforms are now.
Now, what about pornography? What about self-harm? I mean, did unsolicited pornography arrive on your phone?
No, not really. I think Twitter, you can see it, like sometimes that would come up. I mean, that video from the portal is possibly an example of that surfaced recently. In terms of TikTok and Instagram, I wouldn't say I've come across that too much. In terms of self-harm, I haven't seen that either. Now, I don't know if there's ways that they're getting around it or if it depends what you're liking and everything. But I suppose that self-improvement thing, I mean, there is a lot of mental health-esque TikToks where people share experiences about, you know, their struggles through mental health, or there's these kind of, I don't know how to describe them, like pick-me-up TikToks. So it's like, this is for people who are struggling, like it'll be okay is kind of the message it's putting across. That's the closest I've gotten
now,
to that.
Now, TikTok have moderators who are supposed to moderate content, and I presume there's so much of it they can only moderate when it's brought to their attention. They're not scouring the uploads all the time to find stuff. They have to wait till they get a complaint. But I'm told that they have mental health experts minding their moderators, whereas the kids who are using this stuff, who come across this stuff, have no such help, which is a bizarre situation.
Yeah, that's ludicrous, quite frankly, because albeit, these people who are moderators are going to be exposed to the most horrific side of the platform, so they do need it. I'm not disparaging that at all, but, you know, equally, people my age and mostly younger, let's face it, are the ones that are scrolling, and sometimes they might face this first before a moderator does.
What about toxicity, racism, far-right stuff? Threats?
Yeah. The last 2 years, this has become worse. As you know, when I was in school, I was, saying before we came out, I don't think TikTok or any of that had a major effect on me as a teenager, funny enough. But now the platforms have changed. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, all of them. They've all changed. And they have, obviously, we have a massive anti-immigrant sentiment at the moment. That's a battle in itself. That's making its way to platforms. I've heard from a lot of people who are seeing it. And in fairness, a lot of the people my age, I think, are fairly switched on to that. They're fairly clued in on, you know, the issue, and they see it as the issue it is, but they don't, for instance, they're not buying into the whole anti-immigrant sentiment.
That comes from a cohort that might have an education.
Absolutely. And there is definitely some people who are unfortunately falling into that. Equally as well, just the general toxicity of people abusing each other on platforms, people calling each other out on things, and just a general hateful environment is what I'm seeing on social media. So much so, I've actually recently had to stop going on Twitter, and I'm trying not to delete the app because I want to try and control it myself, of like just every time I go into it, say, no, actually, I don't need to go onto it. So it's actually recently I've found that has had an effect on me personally, rather than while I was a teenager, while I was in secondary school, which is what this survey, which has found a lot of this, was based on secondary school students. So I can only imagine that secondary school students seeing it now, I mean, the effect it's having on them.
Now, some of the texts coming in before I talk to Alwyn. I let my young son have my tablet for half an hour before he went to bed. I noticed he was watching YouTube too often, so I deleted the app. The next evening, he told me the app was missing, but not to worry, he would download it and reinstall it. He was 3 years old. Now, that's one. Another one. Unknown to me, my son, who was then 9, set up a public TikTok account on his tablet and posted some dance moves online. fast track 5 years. He's a new private TikTok account, but one of his peers found the original cringy posts from his original account and has been teasing him relentlessly ever since. Thankfully, we managed to take down the original account, but it has been a steep learning curve for him and for us. Yep. So, Alwyn Moran, listening to Alex there with your eyes getting wider and wider, you are founder of Cogni Kids. Tell me about Cogni Kids. What do you do?
Oh, we do developmental products for babies specifically at the moment. And I founded it actually 10 years ago when I noticed that there was a change in babies' development, that they weren't developing their fine motor skills because they were being given access to screens. 86% of six-month-old babies are given access to screen devices, which means they're just swiping and tapping and they're not actually using those fine motor skills, developing their hand strength, their manual dexterity. All super important for development.
So. I mean, there are videos and people have had personal experience of a young baby, maybe 1.5 or 2, and you hand them a picture frame with a framed picture in it,
and they try to swipe on it. Yes, no, absolutely. So that's where Cogni Kids came, but it came from my passion and research into screen devices and the impacts on developing brains.
What is your reaction to this research, which says teenagers, by and large, are not controlled in any way by their parents in terms of the access to smartphones, and also what you're hearing about what they're finding in terms of pornography, self-harm and other damaging stuff, which is everywhere?
So, number one, in terms of my reaction, I'm not surprised. You know, I think that they said that 94% of the 3,700 pupils that were surveyed said that no, they had no parental guidelines in place for use or rules for use of their smartphone. So I am not surprised, unfortunately. And, you know, I suppose kind of where things are going, as Alex has said, is it just seems to be going downhill. The most recent research, and there's a great piece of research from the UK last year, and they looked at algorithms and how they actually work. And they created 5 accounts for 5 different types of boys of vulnerabilities to see what kind of content would be pushed to them.
So these were artificial accounts,
they were
and
artificial.
They constructed them to mimic 5 different characteristics.
5 different characteristics of boys, kind of the more vulnerable. So that they find that, you know, this is in terms of misogynistic, hate, kind of racist content. And so they profiled the 5 different boys. They created those then separate accounts. And within 5 days, in Instagram, they have this For You page, and TikTok, they have a For You page. And within 5 days, the misogynistic, racist, hate-filled content that was been driven to them had increased from 13% to 56% of all suggested content. So that is within 5 days. So the algorithm was just pushing.
Okay, let's talk about what an algorithm might do. For example, if you're thinking of going on holiday and you, it'll, you know, shower you with holiday offers, or you're looking for a hotel in Cork, you'll get loads of hotels being offered to you. So that's the benign side of an algorithm. You have an interest. If you're interested in falconry, for example, you'll get loads of stuff on falcons.
Absolutely.
That's the good thing.
Yes, it is indeed.
If you seed the algorithm with something that is a vulnerability or a nastiness, maybe one hate-filled thing, that's what you'll get back. It's an echo chamber.
It is an absolute echo chamber, 100%. And so they, and like children accidentally see the algorithm where they might see a preview of a reel and, you know, you only get like a split second of a reel and they're designed to look interesting. So they'll click on that and then the rest of the reel then.
So it's like an avalanche.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It gets bigger
and then
and bigger
once
and
they've
bigger.
Clicked on that one reel, then the algorithm goes, haha, they've clicked on this content. So we'll push more of this content to them. And it literally, it just literally snowballs.
What does this do to the developing child's brain?
The key thing is that our vulnerable children, you know, now Alex is saying now he's 20 and he can now kind of distinguish himself as well, you know, and he's much more, I suppose, aware of the content that he's consuming, which is brilliant for this age group. But actually where the vulnerability is that preteen from 10 up to 14 in particular, because the brain actually goes through a change in that space where up until about 10 years of age, your children are actually programmed for you to be the center of the world, you're the parent or caregiver. And they're very bonded, very connected. But after that, around 10 to 14, it's where their brain starts to kind of go, hang on a second. I always say it's when the eye rolling starts to come in at home and you're talking and you're asking for something to be done or you're telling a story and they're like, ugh, eye rolling, you know. And so be aware of that. But that it's all perfectly normal. They are designed to pull away from us slightly because they have to go to find their own tribe. And this is where it's come from. They have to go out to find now their own tribe and figure out who their peers are and who they are. So this is a huge age of influence. And it's really very, very dangerous. They're extremely vulnerable at this point in their life because they are, you know, they're looking for somebody new to follow or to be a part of, or, you know, that kind of a pseudo family in a way with their peers. So this is a very, very vulnerable stage.
So the question is what to do. I mean, you call on parents maybe to have more control. I heard our own Shane Coleman this morning on The Breakfast Show saying that, you know, he's not great at doing this. And Kira said the same. No, not great. Bit of a tech phobia going on there. But Shane says one rule in our house, you don't take your phone to bed.
Yes.
So, you know, in the bedroom, no phone. So you get a good night's sleep. You can't be bullied on your phone if you don't have it.
Yeah.
And you're not waking up to your phone first thing in the morning. So that's a start.
That is a start. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like you wouldn't let your child wander around the streets of Dublin at 10 o'clock at night on their own, unsupervised. And, you know, it's actually probably safer than if they were let with their super computer, essentially, what's in the palm of their hand. Definitely not in the rooms. But my big thing is actually don't or try to hold off as long as possible on giving the phone. So at 16, I think, is a much better age to give somebody a smartphone. If they need a phone for communication, if they're traveling to school or something like that, get a dumb phone so that you can communicate with them, they can communicate with you. But, you know, absolutely anything that is a smartphone, I'm going to give you a stat here now, Pat, just the subcortical structures of the brain now, new research out of the States is showing that they're not developing properly. These are the areas of the limbic system, the thalamus, the amygdala, the hypothalamus. These are where emotions are like moderated and processed. And
so if that's not developing properly,
it's not developing properly.
What impact does that have on a young adult? How are they likely to behave?
And we have to look at our mental health crisis or our poor mental health crisis among our teens now. It's like it's an epidemic. So there has to be undeniably a link connected to that.
I'll get back to Alex in a moment, but what to do about this? I mean, the genie is out of the bottle.
Hold off till 16, if at all possible. Dumb phone. Do put regulations in with your children.
Do the platforms themselves have to take responsibility, be open to legal action, number one, because that would smarten their cough. If, for example, some child comes to harm on foot of something that was available.
We know already many children have come to harm, unfortunately.
But the platforms say, we're only a platform, we're not a publisher.
Exactly, and they hide behind that. They employ people to make their apps addictive. They know that. They know how to keep people engaged on their app. They use that. And, you know, it's very vulnerable children that they really are targeting. So they have to be held accountable. Also, our policymakers have to step up to the mark and, you know, enforce something. If you take, for example, in China has a completely different, they don't allow nonsense content on TikTok to stream to the phones. It's maths, science, engineering, it's educational content that's streamed. Anybody who wants to do online gaming in China.
So the Chinese, basically, by exporting TikTok, are destroying the moral fibre of the West while reinforcing their own scientific capabilities.
Well, you can take from that what you want to take from it, but that's what's happening. They also, the government, have a portal that if a child wants to do online gaming from the comfort of their own home, they have to sign up to the portal with what would be the equivalent of our PPS number. And they have to give their date of birth, obviously linked to their PPS number. And they are only allowed online game for a specific amount of time. I think it's like an hour every evening, and it's shut off at 10 o'clock at night. Mm. So there are things that our governments can do if they want to take their head out of the sand and, you know, stand up and face what is going on. This really is very, very serious. I've been talking about this for 10 years. And it's great to see that it's finally coming to the fore now, where we are realizing it. There are massive knock-on effects.
All right, Alex, what to do?
Well, I think I'm conscious there's a lot of parents listening who might feel like they're a little bit of blame on this. I don't think it is fair to put any blame on parents with this. I don't think they should feel guilty for this. But it's because it is an uphill battle, and it is, you know, it is a different generation. It's a generational gap, essentially. I mean, the difference between a 12-year-old and what they see in the world and what they know about the world is far different to what I know and see as well. I worked in a fun park down where I live at home a few years ago, and I couldn't understand half the things the kids would say to us, and I was 17. So, you know, there is always this generational gap. I'm conscious of that. I think Alwyn makes a great point about social media companies having to step up. I mean, we saw this morning, I mean, CIE were talking about having a youth board to advise on public transport debates. Why don't we do that for social media companies? Why don't social media companies in Ireland go into schools and pick people out to be a part of a board and advise them as to what they see every day, what their mental health issues are, what they understand about the world, what they'd like to know about the world? And I think if any of them are listening now, I think that's an idea to go with and go into schools and educate people about these platforms. When I was in school as well, we watched a great thing called The Social Dilemma.
That's incredible.
That's an incredible thing to watch. Yeah. It's on Netflix. If people want to understand a lot about it, I think as well.
It really shows how an algorithm works. So yeah, if anybody wants to understand
the social dilemma, still available
the social
on
dilemma
Netflix.
On Netflix.
It was,
yeah,
anyway, the last time I saw. Yeah. And then as well, just for parents, you know, I think it's worth educating themselves about what is online. It is worth maybe having a look at some of these apps in your spare time. I know parents are busy, but definitely, like, I know it's, and as well, it's an uphill battle. Yeah. Alwyn suggests it's giving them a phone at 16. A lot of parents are going to say that's really hard to do when you're getting pressure at home. But definitely try and hold off as long as you can anyway. 16, it might not work out, but as long as you can.
All right, yeah.
I always say it's easier to have the no conversation than it is to have the constant rule navigation conversation. Once you hand over the phone, you hand over the power to the little ones. But also informing the parents isn't, you know, trying to make parents feel shamed.
Alwyn Moran, founder of Cognic Kids and a News Talk journalist, 20-year-old Alex Rowley, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.